Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And now, a presentation on the Mental Health News Radio Network. The Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show.
Ryan, that is a freaking awesome question.
You are the power, and you do not need anybody's permission.
He's the only guy that ever crawled out of a grave where people didn't go, oh, ah!
Don't worry, don't be afraid, ever,
because this is just a ride.
You're a great interviewer. You're one of the best.
If this is the best God can do, I am not impressed.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Out of Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show. OuterLimitsRadio.com. I'm your host, Ryan. Tonight is a special event. We are re-airing an interview that we did with legendary actor and comedian Richard Belzer. Cannot speak enough kind words about this individual. First off, he is a rebel and he challenges everything. He's also a very successful TV personality. You've probably seen him in Law & Order, where he played Detective Munch. He's also an impassionate animal rights activist. I met him back in 2008 when I was doing PR for the New York City Underground Comedy Festival. And we got a chance to talk, and we would talk for long periods of time. We would just have all these different philosophical discussions, and he was a really cool guy. And I couldn't believe how nice he was. And it was pretty surreal, too, because I grew up watching him on TV, and I always admired his work as a comedian. And here we are having conversations, long conversations about whether or not UFOs exist and what the future of humanity was going to be like. So I couldn't tell you, he couldn't be a nicer person. And I'm so thankful that we kept in touch for all these years. After the interview with Richard tonight, you're also going to be hearing a forensic soul analysis on him. So we have psychic medium Carrie O'Connor, psychic empath Lisa Kaza, and astrologer Constance Ellis, as you come to know and love as the Outer Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show Virtues. They're each going to do an analysis on him. I think you're going to be pretty surprised at what you learn. Let us begin tonight's show.
Mr. Belzer, it's a great honor to have you on our program today. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Richard, you wrote a great new book called Corporate Conspiracies, How Wall Street Took Over Washington. Basically talking
right.
about how big business is screwing the people. Of all the things that you covered, what would you say would be the most daunting and most shocking allegation or facts that shows how the corporations are basically destroying the public?
Well, there's a lot. But if I had to pick one example, it would be General Motors having full knowledge of one of their vehicles having a problem with its starters and people got killed. And General Motors deemed, well, it's cheaper to pay off the families than to retrofit the cars. So there you have it. Money over human life. And, you know, that's not such an unusual example. There are other more subtle ways of endangering the public for corporate expediency. It's sad, but people are waking up and there's a lot of activists now, and the people can fight back. We have to, because there's no more leadership in this country. It's up to us now.
So how have you seen this trajectory evolve in the last 30 years? And you've also written other books that have challenged the powers that be. So how have you seen this trajectory evolve, and what made you so passionate about this that you wanted to take action?
Well, the other books I've written about murders of famous people and cover-ups of crimes and JFK, and I did a book about Marilyn and Bobby Kennedy and Dr. King, and I did another book called Hit List, which is people in and around the Kennedy assassination who died mysteriously. And other books about UFOs, JFK. But this, I think, I have to agree with some of the interviewers that this is my most important book because it's not, there's no speculation in it. There's no theorizing in it. The bibliography is very formidable. And kind of proven what most people in America who are even semi-enlightened have felt for a long, long time, that big business owns every politician and really is more powerful than our representatives. And as that dawns on people, they need reality and truth. And I feel that at the risk of being immodest, that there's a lot of good, you know, there's facts in my book that people can use to further study this stuff and bring certain people to account legally. So I think it's an important book. And, you know, my partner David Wayne is just an astounding researcher and dedicated, as I am, or even more so. You know, there are some good guys, and we're trying. It's not easy. You know, it's funny. My last book made the New York Times bestseller list, but they wouldn't review the book, the New York Times.
Despite the fact that, you know, you're basically a living legend, and, you know, you've written all these books. And
well, I mean, you know, I'm not unknown.
Well,
let's put it that way.
You know, there's a gentleman named Chris Hedges, and he talks about...
Oh, I love Chris Hedges.
Me too. I love him. I think he's an asset. Him and Noam Chomsky.
He's important.
Yeah. He talks about inverted totalitarianism, and he...
What did he say?
Chris Hedges describes the situation in our country as inverted totalitarianism. He basically says that everything is run by the corporate state, and he wrote a recent article about America kind of being in a death spiral or a dance with death where people are actually... becoming passionate about their own self-destructiveness. And I was wondering if...
Passionate about their own self-destructiveness.
Yes, passionate. Like, people are actually kind of running towards, like, the country is basically on its last legs. The empire is about to collapse because, there's no more, like, sense of morality. You said there's no more leadership in the country,
well,
that we have to take it upon ourselves. But do you actually see, when institutions like this get so corrupt and they collapse, you actually see it potentially as a good thing because... You know, you can only go down so far, and there's only good. You can only go farther up. I mean, do you see, like, a collapse of these institutions as a potential changing for the better?
It can only be for the better. I think if there's anything good out of this last election, is that millions of people hit the streets. And I'm old enough to remember the 60s. And I thought that, you know, we fought these battles then, you know, the Vietnam War, civil rights, women's rights, and towards the end of the decade, gay rights. And, you know, that's 45, 50 years ago. And here we are again with the president legitimizing the most vile elements, you know, in society. So it's depressing beyond verbs and adjectives, but it makes people... They say either they feel helpless or they're a citizen and they go out and they do something. And I think extraordinary amounts of people have been energized. And that's a good thing because that's, you know, that's what America is supposed to be about, is an informed citizenry. Is, you know, as Jefferson said, you know, a society, I'm paraphrasing, but a society cannot exist without an informed citizenry. And so citizens are now, because of social media, are informed. A lot of it is you have to wade through the shit, but, you know, the truth is out there. I mean, 1984 goes both ways.
It's pretty crazy how many things that Orwell predicted have actually come through to reality. I mean, it's a book about fiction, and I love when people say, well, look, you know, it was a book. It wasn't a blueprint. It wasn't supposed to be a blueprint. Richard, of all your years of doing stand-up comedy, did you ever feel at one point in time that you were becoming a teacher, that you were actually incorporating some lessons and planting some seeds in the minds of your audiences about what was going on and kind of challenging them to think about?
Yes. And if I wasn't a comedian or an actor, I'd be a journalist or, you know, journalist/historian, probably a journalist. But one of my favorite reviews was I did a gig in Philadelphia, and the critic said, Richard Belz is the only comedian I've ever seen where the audience leaves wondering if he liked them.
Awesome.
Yeah, because there are times where I would say things that weren't jokes, but that were woven into my act that were, you know, truth bombs and meant, I don't want to be pretentious, but I think you can teach. Some people can teach, like Richard Pryor, Lenny Bruce, and a handful, George Carlin. And they're important people, because when you see the absurdity and the humor and the frailty and the magnificence of humanity, there's a lot there.
When you were on stage, what would you think was the most controversial lesson that you were trying to convey on stage? And were you nervous before you said it? Were you nervous knowing that?
But I was attacked and censored when Reagan first became president, because I immediately started to eviscerate him when he was so beloved. And I did a routine about Reaganomics, where part of it was, you know, if you're hungry, eat tree bark. If you want sex, you know, just have oral. It just, you know, what was broken down about Reaganomics was, you know, fuck the poor. And so I was doing that bit in the early part of his presidency, and I kept doing it. It would get laughs, some heckles, you know. And as time went on, it got bigger and bigger laughs. And then, you know, like 3-4 years into his presidency, I was killing with stuff that I was booed for 3 years earlier.
Wow. So did you ever have any kind of a relationship with Bill Hicks or other people? Like you said, you mentioned George Carlin before, but do you think that Bill Hicks was somebody who was just out there that trying to wake people up? I mean, were there other comedians that you resonated with that were really kind of trying to get people to become aware of the
Bill? Bill cared about the truth and cared about people's perception of the truth, and was very, very passionate. There's a lot of guys that write jokes and they, you know, start with the same word every night and end with the same word. And that's fine. And, you know, they have their audience and they kill. But there's a handful of comedians who just feel also an obligation, because they have a platform, to, you know, spill their guts. And somebody like Bill, fortunately, he's funny and eloquent and passionate. So we want him, you know, he is missed. Because there aren't many people, you know, like Bill.
Or even you.
Go ahead.
I mean, the way you're presenting it. But, Richard, coming back earlier in your life, I mean, it's
and Dick Gregory, of course, the best of them all. But go ahead.
Talk about
a teacher. Dick Gregory taught us a lot.
Why was he the best from your perspective?
Because he came along at a time when race relations were very testy. He wrote a book called Nigger, and he performed, and, you know, one of his opening line used to be, you know, if you're going to laugh at me, I'll follow you home. And he would talk about race and in a way that American audiences or any audience had ever heard before. And to this day, I mean, he's... Dick is a 90-something now, and he's still performing. And his middle years are just astounding. I mean, you know, he's revered by everyone, by Lenny, by George, by, you know, by all of us.
And just to get an idea of how you developed your persona, how you developed your perception in life, my understanding is that when you were younger, you lost both parents at a relatively younger age. And I was wondering how the loss of both your parents actually shaped your reality and kind of accelerated your perception.
It's hard to verbalize something like that because I know comedians who came out of normal families, relatively, and I know comedians who, you know, the cliche that comedians suffer and behind the mask of comedy is, that held true when a lot of people came over from Europe and were doing, you know, vaudeville, and a lot of them were immigrants, and so the humor now, you know, people grow up and they go to college and they, oh, I want to be a comedian, you know, so it's a little different. So, but what shaped me, even when, you know, when I was a little kid, I was thrown out of every school. I was always questioning authority and always being the class clown and, you know, always asking why. And so I think if my parents survived or not, I'd be on this trajectory. And so, you know, I'm certainly informs who I am, but I don't think that tragedy equals creativity. Just because you suffer doesn't mean that you can extrapolate the experience so that other people can laugh at it or cry or learn from it. So, you know, a lot of people have tragedy, but very few people, you know, like Richard Pryor and others can take something that one person can't even imagine having any humor in it. And, you know, like when Richard had a heart attack or when he, you know, almost was burned to death, he found humor in tragedy. And that's, you know, it's a very high art. There's very few people.
Talk about themselves being set on fire when they're smoking crack. I thought that was amazing that he could talk about that.
Yeah. But, yeah, that was 1980.
You said that you were kicked out of every school. So when you were born, did you feel, I was going to describe it, there's a term for it, I guess you call it a fringe dweller, like you felt that you were here, but you didn't necessarily, like a kind of an alien on this place? Did you feel completely out of place here that, for some reason, you just couldn't relate to people or understand why everyone thought a certain way?
Almost, but I know as a child, I always liked being around older kids and adults, and I understood more than the adults around me thought, because I overhear my mother and my aunts talking about someone disparagingly, and then someone would turn and look at me, and like they'd keep talking. It's like, it's okay if he hears it, but I did hear it. And so I was always intrigued by the duplicitousness of most people, you know, their public face and their private face. Also, I was a newspaper reporter in the 60s, and so I had a chance to write about poverty and the war, and that led to me, you know, taking the fork in the road to performing or staying in journalism.
And what would you say would be, were there any particular teachers that you had that really kind of galvanized? Were there any particular teachers that really, that helped you kind of, you know, raise your game and to help you kind of explore different facets about yourself you didn't know before? Were there any books that you read that really inspired you to kind of accelerate your development and growth?
Believe it or not, Lenny Bruce's autobiography, which came out in 1967 or something, I forget, that affected me deeply. Of course, 1984, Ionesco's plays, Pinter's plays, the kind of the Heinlein line of Stranger in a Strange Land. I always did feel kind of, not apart from it all, but not above it all, but kind of an observer.
Okay.
And, that makes any sense?
Yeah, and when you've played various roles in your career, have there ever been a role that you were playing whose, I guess, character was such a contradiction from who you were in an inside on the inside that you maybe didn't play that character up to their full potential, knowing that you didn't want to have people catch on to a character whose persona was the antithesis of who you were on the inside?
Yeah, I have. Fortunately, I played the same character for 20 years on two different shows. So I, my image, I think, is of the good guy, cynic, you know, hippie who became a cop, you know, Lenny Bruce with a badge. Very lucky for me to have this character. It's very close to how I would be in reality. So I had the luxury of being typecast and asked to play detective in other things other than Munch. You know, like there's been a few other shows where it says detective and they would call me. But Munch did like 10 different shows.
It's incredible. Character. That may be one of the longest characters that's ever been perpetually played out. And are there any actors that you work with that you felt had the greatest impact on who you are and really helped hone your talent in? Are there any actors that really taught you some incredible lessons, not only about life but about your craft?
Working with Ned Beatty on Homicide, we were partnered up, and of course he's a great actor, and I was not intimidated, but you know, close to it. And the first day that we were working on this big scene, he was so naturalistic and so relaxed, and that reassured me because of my style of acting is try to react and be natural and try not to act, if that makes any sense. I mean, you know, he was just so, and he was very helpful and supportive of me, and so I think that was a key moment because that was, you know, Homicide was, you know, Barry Levinson, a network show, and with all these wonderful actors, and so he was very helpful just by being who he is, not teaching me how to read lines or anything, but by example.
Excellent. And I want to come back to some things that you're talking about your book that you've actually, you know, you've really trying to make people aware of what's happening in the world. And I was wondering, you said that you see more people waking up, but do you also see that because people are taking to social media and they're on Twitter all the time and they're condensing all their language into 160 words, that in some way the language is devolving to some capacity, and that people, for the most part, are not really are able to express themselves in ways they have been before?
I think that's a legitimate observation in that when you have so many people, millions and millions upon millions of people using social media, there's going to be millions of people that are deadened in a way by it in terms of language skills or writing. Hold on 1 second. And yet there are others whose vastly improved knowledge over the internet. I mean, I know that from personal experience. You know, the internet is a library of Alexandria. You could, you know, read about anything you want. And it's the first time in history. So certainly people who are ill-equipped to handle all this information are not going to get it, even though they may have access to it. But there are those that know what to do with knowledge.
Is there any things that you would recommend a person can do to accelerate their awakening?
That's a good question. Well, I think the hardest thing in the world to do is to look at yourself and to listen to your inner voice and ask the question, you know, who's making me breathe? Why am I taking a breath? You know what I mean? It's like there's so much to be known and so much that is beyond our grasp that people have to settle on, you know, a particular thing that they love or that interests them and just go to town on it. There's no excuse for not knowing, you know, more about what you are interested in at this point in history. I mean, when I was younger, I went to the library. Now I just flip open my laptop. It's a new world. Responsibility is on the individual, I think, because there's no leadership, you know, morally or ethically at the top. You know, when John Kennedy was president, people wanted to be in government service, and they admired education, and now it's like where certain people are glorifying thuggery instead of, you know, knowledge. You know, people, we got smarter under Obama, and I don't say we're getting dumber, but we're stalled now with this tin pot.
I'm calling it maybe an interesting period of time, but what do people go? What do you think people should go for morality? You know, to find the moral high ground. I mean, where should they go to seek morality? And I guess it'll open up another question: is where would you describe yourself in your path of evolution? Are you a spiritual person? Are you somebody who meditates? Do you believe in a God? Do you believe that you're part of the eternal being that's called God? Or what's your perspective on spirituality?
I do meditate, and I do, for my entire adult life, have grappled with the idea of, you know, why are we here and what's going on and the Big Bang and what started everything. I mean, these are questions that certainly anybody, virtually anyone, is thought about at one point or another, but I think there are many things that are beyond our grasp in terms of human knowledge, not to get too lofty, but when you talk about the concept of a created design or a deity, the conversation goes off the rails because it's so personal, and everyone has their own perception of the greater good, or, you know, is there a consciousness beyond ours, or is there a collective consciousness? These are all legitimate questions that are, I think, are ultimately kind of unanswerable. But I don't despair, because there's enough. I believe in the old adage that the more you know, the less you know. I mean, my wife and I have been studying World War I and World War II over the last few days, and there's some great documentaries I learned a lot. And, you know, I'm an old man, so there's so much out there to learn and explore, and it helps define who you are as an individual, what you're interested in, what you want to become, whether you believe in a God or not. I think everyone agrees in the basic precept of treating everyone fairly and doing to others, that adage. I think most people are charitable and compassionate at heart. I think that humanity, basically people are good. Otherwise, why does the lie detector show stress when we lie? Doesn't that prove something?
Yeah, it could probably reveal something about them. And
Richard, have you ever thought about that?
Well, I mean,
doesn't that mean that lying is bad if we have stress when we lie?
I think it could.
That means we're inherently good.
It's part of human nature. There's an individual we featured on a program before that says that human beings are simply animals. They're animals, and part of our nature that we're always trying to fight against is part of our nature. It's like, you know, humans have tendencies. They tend to be jealous. They tend to kill each other. They tend to do all these different things. But fundamentally, I guess we can be good.
hopefully.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the message of every great teacher is the same, you know, about being charitable and compassionate. And unfortunately, there are forces at work that, you know, that try to deconstruct that because it doesn't meet their interests. And that's partially what my book is about, the corporate conspiracies of how corporations have lost any semblance of compassion to the bottom line. And people know that, are catching on. They think that we'll see in the future boycotts and companies that are more compassionate. And I'm hopeful. The next few years are going to be very bad.
Let's Why do you think they're going to be very bad?
How could they be good?
No, so, well, why do you think they're going to? Well, do you think that it's going to be bad?
So obvious.
Is it because of the president?
Donald Trump is the president of the United States.
But he may
That's
be.
The most,
I mean,
you know.
Yeah, he's the president, but at the same time, it's like he could be. You could have anyone in that office, but it. Everyone has a choice, conscious choice, to make a decision to be a better person or evolve. And I mean,
no, but he's the moral leader of the country. He is the commander in chief of the armed forces. This is, you know, a terrible, terrible time for America. It's embarrassing. We're losing prestige around the world. We're betraying all our principles. This fucking clown is, you know, clearly a racist. There's no more doubt about it. It's just sad. And then, you know, if we get rid of him, then we have this other pray away the gay fucking guy. And if we get rid of him, we have Ryan. So we're in deep shit.
Hey, well,
until
that's Paul Ryan, not Ryan of the Outer Limits. That's a different Ryan. So,
right.
Yeah, it could be pretty bad. But for the last question, Mr. Belzer, you one thing I admire about you. I mean, in addition to all the great work you've done, great books you've written, you're also a passionate animal rights activist. And I remember Wendy Diamond, the founder of Animal Farm Magazine, she was raving about you. She's like, "Oh, Richard, you're so great, and you rescue all these animals. Can you please?" Tell us a little bit about you know, why you're so passionate about animal rights and, you know, why you're really passionate with about your dog and
anyone who owns a dog or a cat knows how important they are to the development of humanity. I mean, dogs don't lie about love. They make us more human. You know, for thousands of years they've been bred to be our companion. So to betray that, you know, to use animals to test chemicals or, you know, to dog fighting and all these other grotesqueries are sacrilegious because these are innocent animals that all they want to do is please us. I mean, they've been bred. That's why dogs, you know, they're always looking in the human's eyes. They want to know, what do we want? How can I be better? In fact, over thousands of years, dogs' DNA has changed to be more like a human. And humans, when they're with dogs, have a chemical response that's akin to when mothers breastfeed. So we are, you know, they are our moral superiors in a way, and yet we have to protect them. And you know, I have five dogs. And they have taught me more. They have taught us more about, you know, each one has a different personality and different needs. And, you know, they are better than people because they're so trusting and so loving.
I wouldn't agree with you more. I would save a dog before I save a person in the river.
Of course.
<Yep. laughs> Mr. Richard Belzer, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. You can learn more about Mr. Belzer by going to his website at ibelz.com. Again, the book is Corporate Conspiracies, How Wall Street Took Over Washington. You can buy it on Amazon. It's got rave reviews. Mr. Belzer, it's a real pleasure and great honor to have you with us today. I'm so thankful.
Thank you. I had a great time. You made it very easy. Have a good night. Okay, my friend.
Joining us now is the queen of the universe, internationally respected psychic medium, Miss Carrie O'Connor. We can learn more about Miss Carrie O'Connor and get a reading with Miss Carrie O'Connor by going to her website at carrieoconnor.com. Miss O'Connor, what can you tell us about Mr. Richard Belzer?
Mr. Richard Belcher is a wonderful soul. I love that he uses his position and as a clout in Hollywood to, he's not afraid to talk about conspiracy theories. He's not afraid to talk about JF Kennedy. He's not afraid to talk about 9/11, the airplane accidents. I love that he is not, he uses his voice to put a light into the conspiracy theories and everything that has to do with that. So he is the, you could say the advocate for the, that is in the shadow, and that because he has the clout and the experience that he has, and that people listen to him and they like him, and he also has that dry sense of humor. So he knows how to weave in the humor, which is really perfect, because that really, a lot of times it opens up people's energetic ears, Ryan, so they're more willing to listen to him instead of if somebody else said it that didn't have his, you know, his fame and fortune, they would have just blown him off and call him a nuthead. He stands behind himself. He says, states the facts. He illuminates, and so he plants seeds in a person's head. How fast those seeds go down in their energy field is totally up to them, but he definitely spoon feeds them so they could start looking at life beyond the matrix. So he's a matrix breaker. He breaks through the matrix and is allowing people to go beyond mind, motion, ego, and especially our training on how to view life. Where so many people blindly trust the government. I was just having a discussion with that Destiny girl that we were talking about, and she said she thinks there's something more than 9/11, and she was even talking to her peers, and she's in her young 20s, and she sometimes they really kind of energetically or literally think, you know, of course the government will never be behind that. Why would they do that, blah, blah, blah. And she absolutely, as I do, feels that there's something more. So he is the voice of Hollywood that then lead people into starting to question things that they have blindly felt, you know, followed before. I love that.
And do you sense or get a feeling about anything about his past lives, or is that even relevant in this particular lifetime?
He's had many, many lifetimes as advocate, gone against governments. I also saw, right before you called, I was tapping into his energy, and I saw him going into the Knights of Templar, where he went in and was all about reaching the sword out, pulling the sword out of the stone, right? And a lot of that's very symbolic, finding your own inner truth and all that. And he spent many lifetimes doing an inner journey, right, and having lifetimes of extreme wealth, but also poverty, right? So he's done both things. In this lifetime in particular, I call him the bridger. He's a bridger to be able to individually and collectively help himself and others break through the matrix, step back, look at life without the vision. When we're born, we have these vision finders on us that keep us in duality, and he allows people to step back and really start. He feeds them. He gives them, imagine a silver platter that has a lot of healthy food on it, and the way he delivers it, people, again, ingest this, digest it, mull it around, and again, what they want to do with it. Some of them spit it out immediately. Some of them let it mull around in their mouth for like wine when you're wine tasting. Other people, they allow the information to go down and then make changes. So he's done that in many, many lifetimes. In a nutshell, I call him the advocate bridger, especially the advocate for the underdog, and he's done it in many, many incarnations.
And is there any particular person whose energy resonance do you think Richard Belcher is closely connected with, based on something that we've worked with, either had on a show, or someone else you see in the world today, maybe a person that he may even be where he's connected to?
I would say when you were just formulating this question, I saw Stuart Weil stand behind him, and it's not, it's, he's in the Stuart Weil, you could say, soul group, because Stuart Weil was the same exact thing that I said. He was in for the underdogs. He helped people see beyond mind and emotion. So he's part of that soul group, you know what I mean? And also, just before you said that, I saw him with the tilted crown, where I know he had this lifetime where he was a crown, but was in royalty, and his shoulders are bent over with, I don't want this responsibility. This is a bunch of bullshit. What a farce, when, especially when he's trained since he was little, and then when he got the real rules behind the golden door, it didn't resonate with him at all. And that lifetime stuck with him as I have to fill this role that I'm not comfortable with. I'm never, ever going to do this again. As soon as his father died, he changed a lot of roles, but he got a lot of resistance. And I also see him walking away like that prince and the one that ended up marrying, and he ended up getting a divorce, and so he lost his rights to the kingdom because he got a divorce. He fell in love with that Wallace lady or something like that. Something similar happened to him, but it wasn't about love. It was about him not following the rules that were set out for him in that lifetime with, like, what I call energetic hangover in this lifetime. So he came in here, hell or high water, he was going to be an advocate some way. And then look what he does. He does humor, he does acting, he does writing. So it's all different venues where he could connect to certain people. So I love the guy. I've always loved him on the show, especially the victim one, the Law and Order one, and actually the other one. So he's not afraid. It's very scorpionic, afraid to go in the dark and the murky energy, but his thing is to be able to bring light into the dark and murky energy. I love it.
Miss Terry O'Connor, the queen of the universe and internationally respected psychic medium, I want to thank you so much for being with us today and for providing all your great insight. As always, to learn more about Miss Terry O'Connor and to get your own psychic reading with Miss Terry O'Connor, please go to our website at terryoconnor.com.
Thank you, Ryan. Always a pleasure.
Joining us now is the Astro Freedom astrologer, Miss Constance Stellis. You can learn more about Miss Constance Stellis and get your own astrological chart done with Miss Constance Stellis by going to her website at constancestellis.com. Miss Stellis, what do you see in the chart of Mr. Richard Belzer?
Well, we do not have a proper birth time, but that doesn't totally discount his astrology chart. He is a major Leo with a stellium, that's three planets in one sign of Leo. And his moon sign is Aquarius, and that is the opposite sign to Leo. So it's an interesting combination because the sun is fire, Leo, and is ruled by Leo. So that we see the drama, we see the desire to put himself forward in a dramatic way. And then we see a very kind of forward-looking, maybe even eccentric, no, definitely eccentric, Aquarius moon that is trying to balance the personal needs of the performer, Leo. So that kind of seesaw between Leo and Aquarius has been the thrust of his life. Now, I know he has a new book out, and I think that astrologically we would say that that connects with, the Pluto and the Sun conjunction. In other words, they're both in Leo and they're very close together. So he is normally, naturally, natively a very suspicious person. However, he is so attuned to power dynamics that he accepts nothing at face value. And he has also three positions in Virgo, which makes him a very, very strong researcher and the details of everything. So he's not just kind of going on about they. You know, he can document things. So a very questing mind. Also, somebody who wants to demonstrate the, drama that surrounds politics and all sorts of things. He understands power and wants to unmask it. And his intent is to wake people up. And he's also a little, you know, keen on having people notice him as well.
All the ability, I mean, do you think he's got persuasive abilities based on his chart? Is he a natural influencer? Do you think he's more of an entertainer, more of an influencer?
I think that he influences through entertainment. I mean, if he were to start giving speeches, people would be drawn to him because he makes it interesting and he communicates very well. So whatever he has to say, people will get the message. Whether the message is, you know, wake up, the government's lying to you, or life should be a little bit fun. All of those things are part of his, let's say, equipment. So I think that they go hand in hand. He's a very integrated personality.
And when you look at his chart, you mm-hmm. see what he's doing in his profession. Do you see mm-hmm. other aspects of his chart that basically where he could be fulfilling more potential, where there's other areas of his life that he could be focusing on or other fields he could be working in where he could actually have a tremendous amount of success that maybe he hasn't fully utilized? Because he's very successful as an author, very successful as an actor, very successful as a comedian, as a prolific writer. Are there any areas, again, that you see?
I don't think he would be that interested in other areas. They wouldn't be fun, and they wouldn't get him the connection with people that he enjoys. I mean, he is a slight guru emphasis in his life, but he wouldn't go off to the monastery and get followers and then come down, you know, from the monastery and give us the religion. That's not his thing. He is his success is in communicating a variety of different ways to look at power and the structure of power, and also to enjoy himself. He has a great fire spirit that is contagious, also very intelligent.
Couldn't agree with you more. Ms. Constance Stellis, the astrophenom. I want to thank you so much for your great analysis of Mr. Richard Belzer. To learn more about Ms. Constance Stellis and to get your own chart reading done with Ms. Constance Stellis, I highly encourage it. Please go to ConstanceStellis.com. Thank you so much, Ms. Stellis.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Joining us now is the clairvoyant cowgirl, psychic empath, Ms. Lisa Kaza. You can learn more about Ms. Lisa Kaza by going to her website at lisakaza.com. Ms. Kaza, what can you tell us about Mr. Richard Belzer?
Well, I have to be honest and say that I actually, a lot of people are probably going to think I'm real dumb, but I actually didn't know who Richard Belzer was. You see, I don't watch too much TV. But, you know, so I, you know, had to go into this, you know, basically blinded. But I was very pleasantly surprised. As soon as I turned into his energy, I have to say he's got a very dynamic personality. I mean, I see like he's a writer, actor, comedian, musician, excuse me, and just as importantly, a truth seeker. So what I have to say there, you know, I find it very interesting. We seem to get a lot of truth seekers on our show. So he's definitely fits right into the Olet family. The one thing I picked up was his in numerology. Well, I didn't pick it up. It's no brainer. Is his life path number, and it's he's got a life path of 3. And so you know when you have a life path of 3. You know, some of the personality traits are, you know, for example, it has a tendency to live for today and, you know, has a rather practical view of the future. For example, if he sees problems on the horizon, well, he'd be too busy working out solutions in order to even bother worrying about the actual problems. He really applies himself and his wisdom and his drive to basically get things done. And along with that, you know, another trait of a life path of 3 is indeed creativity and superior communication skills are definitely the main strong suit. So a true innovator in areas of writing, acting, and public speaking. Another thing I picked up here was, well, looking at his date of birth, I noticed there's a lot of 4s. In his birth date. And, you know, sometimes numbers speak to me, sometimes they don't. In this case, they did. Because when I consider the energetic vibration of the number 4, it actually tells us even more about Mr. Belzer. He's full of all about justice and patriotism, service, the patience of Job, a lot of devotion and loyalty and passion and drive. And so when I saw that, then the next thing you know, I saw the color of his aura, and it is the most beautiful green aura I've seen in quite a while. It is very vibrant, very clean. And aura, people with green auras, you know, they're connected to healing. You know, you see a lot of healers, teachers, and people who work for the good of the public. They tend to have a green aura. It's, you know, a comfortable color of nature. Of course, loves people and animals. And one thing I notice is that quite often, whenever you see the color green, it could signify something that leads to change or to try to implement change. So with that said, that kind of connects us to the concept of him being a truth seeker and getting the truth out there about certain ideas that are out there. You know, they, people call them conspiracy theories, but they're not conspiracy at all. It's actual truth. So I find it very interesting. All that I saw here so far is connected. It's like a domino effect. And the other thing I see, there are two other things I saw. One is that apparently he had a rather difficult childhood growing up. And I'm not exactly sure, like, what this means, but I'm just hearing that as a result of what he went through, excuse me, as a child, his experiences, he actually learned to use comedy or laughter to quell, for example, anger and other negative emotions. Well, as the saying goes, laughter is the best medicine, and he figured that out relatively early. And so he, you know, he's implemented that in a lot of his work too, whether it's, well, obviously being a comedian or actor, but also the truth seeker as well. Another thing I was told, that he was actually one of the earlier star persons to arrive here on Earth, one of the earlier ones.
He's been here for a long time. And did you sense anything about his previous lifetime? Anything about his past evolutions?
I wasn't really shown too much of that. It's, pardon me, the one thing that I keep getting hung up on is the fact that, or not a fact, but just I see him as being one of the earlier star persons to arrive here. And I think that the reason why I wasn't really being shown too much is because I don't think he had that many lifetimes here on Earth. I feel that it's been more out there in space kind of thing, because I'm not seeing any real, like, other earthly incarnations. If there were, then it was extremely early, because I do pick up something about decoding. I hear the word decoding, but I don't even know what that means or at what time period. It had to have been very early on. I'm figuring time of the pyramids in Egypt. That's the sense that I'm starting to get right now. But other than that, I see his spirit as, you know, basically hanging out in other realms. And actually, you know, whenever he passed, like, let's say, from that one incarnation I do kind of somewhat sense, in Egypt, I'm being told that his spirit basically hung around on the higher planes of existence for quite some time, watching, observing, that kind of thing. And it's like his spirit felt that it wasn't time for him yet to incarnate here until he did, until this time here, this lifetime. That's what I'm picking up.
Miss Lisa Kaza, clairvoyant cowgirl, psychic empath. Thank you so much for your great analysis, Mr. Richard Belzer. To learn more about Miss Lisa Kaza, and to get your own psychic reading with Miss Lisa Kaza, please go to our website at lisakaza.com. Thank you so much, Miss Kaza.
As always, thanks for having me, Ryan.
Okay, everyone, that concludes today's edition of the Out of Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show. Special thanks to our amazing guest, Mr. Richard Belzer, for being with us. Oh, it was so cool.
And special thanks as always to her virtues, Miss Carrie O'Connor, Miss Lisa Kaza, and Miss Constance Stellis. To learn more about the Outer Limits of Inner Tooth Radio Show, please go to our website at OuterLimitsRadio.com. Till the next time we meet, my friends, wishing upon you an abundance of peace, love, and fears. Take good care. Thank you so much for listening.
Want to be heard or seen in front of millions of people?
Want to be an expert on TV or radio?
Goldman McCormick PR is a New York City-based public relations agency that specializes in traditional and social media placement for law, finance, media, and corporate-based clients. Goldman McCormick PR also are specialists in website development, radio show creation, press conferences, media training, and so much more. Check out GoldmanMcCormick.com for more information. GoldmanMcCormick.com.
Hello, this is Ryan, host and executive producer of the Out of Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show. Here today to tell you about the Out of Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show virtues, Miss Carrie O'Connor, psychic medium, psychic empath Lisa Kaza, and Astro Freedom Constance Stellis. All three of these individuals are powerful metaphysical seers, teachers. I love talking to them, and I think you should talk to them as well. Psychic medium Carrie O'Connor, which you can find her at CarrieO'Connor.com, provide a lot of insight on your life. She visually sees spirits. She can tell you all kinds of great information, facilitate communication with your loved ones. Awesome. Check her out, CarrieO'Connor.com. Then you've got the Astro Phenom, Miss Constance Stellis. You lay out your birthday, she'll tell you about where your chart is, where you're headed to, some of the things you can predict, whether or not you're in astrological compatibility with that Mr. or Mrs. Wonderful you're currently dating. See if that can happen. Learn more about Miss Constance Stellis by going to her website at ConstanceStellis.com. And then, of course, we have psychic empath Miss Lisa Kaza at LisaKaza.com. Lisa Kaza is so amazing. She's direct, straightforward, going to give you the straight, honest truth. She provides a tremendous amount of insight into where you're going, and what are some of your biggest decisions. Lisa is very unique, hard-hitting, powerful. Lisa Kaza, Constance Stellis, Carrie O'Connor. All virtues that you can hear on a regular basis on the Out of Limits of Inner Truth Radio Show. I've talked to 75 psychic mediums or more plus in my life. I think these three individuals stand out. They are amazing. I love them to death. Be sure to contact them and learn more about all of them by going to our website at OuterLimitsRadio.com.